acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 37, The Man Who Makes Brooms. Tuesday, May 6, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Ravelry as Sarah Pomegranate. Today's episode includes the following segments: ever-expanding skill set, a little bit of learning, yarn lover at large, and double happiness. I hope you enjoy the show. Ever-expanding skill set. I'd like to start by talking about our winner for the April Rice Bulk Bins Cook-Along. There were many posts with ideas for cooking rice, and the randomly selected post was from Woolly Eyes, who is Kathy from East Hampton, New York. She posted a recipe for cumin-scented quinoa and black rice. Kathy is definitely an improvisational cook because in her post she talked about not having all of the ingredients and some of the substitutions that she makes. So congratulations, Kathy. Send me a personal message to let me know what pattern you would like to receive from Ravelry. And hopefully you'll get this message before you leave for hiking on the Appalachian Trail. I know that Kathy is going to do another 400 or 500 miles on the Appalachian Trail this summer, and this is her third of four segments of hiking the trail. Thanks to everyone who posted in the Bulk Bins Cook-Along thread for April. In May, we are continuing our Bulk Bins Cook-Along by experimenting with amaranth. And I'll talk a little bit more about the history and background and some of the nutritional properties of amaranth in the next segment. I started May by thinking small in terms of cooking with amaranth. And I had read that you can pop it like popcorn, and it makes a crunchy topping for salads and other dishes. So that's what I decided to do for my first experiment with this new grain. I put about half a tablespoon of oil in a small stainless steel pot with a lid. I let that heat up, and then I added about a tablespoon of amaranth. Added the lid, and I shook the pot just like I would do when making popcorn. Unlike with popcorn, you can eat unpopped kernels of amaranth. They are not that hard, although they're a little bit crunchier. And you get this nice toasty flavor. Amaranth has already quite a nutty flavor before it's popped. And I continued treating it like popcorn. I added some salt. I added smoked paprika and a little bit of dill. And I used it as the topping for a salad. A salad featuring lettuce from my porch side garden. And the other way I expanded my skill set this week was to plant some additional lettuce seeds so that I could continue growing and harvesting lettuce from my porch side garden all summer long. I bought a couple different varieties of lettuce and planted them. You plant them very shallow, and we should see germination in 7 to 10 days. So I'll keep the Yarns at Yinhu listeners posted about how my salad bar is going. If you'd like to cook along with the bulk bins, cook along, you can use hashtag bulk bins CAL to tag your photographs or recipe ideas on Instagram or Twitter. A little bit of learning. I decided on Amaranth to be in the spotlight for May when I discovered that Amaranth was the grain of the month chosen by the Whole Grains Council for May. And May is also the month of celiac disease awareness, and amaranth makes a great fit because amaranth is a gluten-free grain. And it's favored by folks who need to consider gluten-free in their diet. It's not exactly a cereal, it's a pseudo cereal, meaning that it belongs to a different plant species than oats, wheat, sorghum, and most other grains. It was domesticated as long as 8,000 years ago and was a major food crop of the Aztecs. Annual grain tributes of amaranth to the Aztec emperor were roughly equal to corn tributes. And not only did Aztecs grow and eat amaranth, but they also used grains as part of their religious practices. Many ceremonies would include the creation of a deity's image that had been made from a combination of amaranth grains and honey. And this mixture was used almost like sculpting material to make shapes. In terms of its nutritional value, amaranth is known as a protein powerhouse. At 13 to 14% protein, it easily has more protein than the content of most other grains. It also has a few things other grains don't have, including vitamin C and the amino acid lysine. Amaranth is known as a cholesterol-lowering grain in several studies that have been conducted over the past several years. And is good for your heart. Amaranth can be found in a lot of different forms. So I purchased amaranth at my local health food store that looks like small grains of couscous or small seeds. But it can also be purchased pulverized into a flour. Or, I suppose, if you have a mill or maybe a Vitamix, you could do that process yourself and make flour out of it. The Whole Grains Council has on its website several different recipes for cooking amaranth, and I'll be trying those throughout the month of May. Yarn lover at large. This past weekend, I traveled to the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival for the first time, and it was my second Sheep and Wool Festival. I did attend Rhinebeck in October of last year, and I had heard a great deal also about the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. I traveled again by bus. Actually, it was a luxury van. And that made for a very comfortable day with no driving hassles, no traffic headaches, and a lot of time to just relax and read and knit while I was traveling to and from the festival. Prior to attending the festival, I had put up a contest thread for ideas about spending $30 at Maryland Sheep and Wool. And I'm happy to announce that the winner of that contest, who will receive a project bag from House of Yarn Knitting Accessories, is Between Raindrops. Between Raindrops has a beautiful photograph of eggplants as her avatar, and she suggested, among other things, that I purchase batlings from Hobbledehoy. So, congratulations, Between Raindrops. And please get in touch with me with your address and your real name so that I can send out that beautiful project bag to you. Thanks to Chris from House Yarn Knitting Accessories, and thank you to everyone who contributed to this thread and gave me some excellent suggestions for shopping. I did spend a little more than $30 at Maryland Sheep and Wool, but I didn't spend much more than $30. If you are interested in complete disclosure, I have posted a photograph of my purchases as well as a handwritten sheet of my accounting on the contest thread. I did dip into my lunch money a little bit, and there were a couple expenses that I counted on, such as admission to the festival and also a tip for the driver and things like that. But largely, I used the advice of Yarns at Yanhu listeners who made excellent suggestions on this contest thread. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my day at Maryland Sheep and Wool and some of the purchases that I made. My first stop upon entering the fairgrounds was to go directly to the Finger Lakes Woolen Mill booth. There I met Sarah, who is Swensty on Ravelry, who is the host of the Fiber Trek podcast and with whom I have been eagerly corresponding over the past several months. Sarah is a great proponent of island wools, critical breeds, natural fibers, etc. And she had turned me on to the fact that the Finger Lakes Woolen Mill would be there with Hog Island fiber roving, and she planned to purchase some. And I thought I would do so as well because she's hosting an island wool knit along, and I thought maybe I could convince her that I should be able to spin for the knit along. So I met Sarah and her husband and her mom, and all were wearing these awesome Fiber Trek t-shirts that were designed by Sarah's mom. And we proceeded to peruse the Hog Island fiber, and I made a purchase of 4 ounces of roving. Sarah had told me a lot about Hog Island fibers, and I believe she also reported some things in one of the episodes of her podcast. Hog Island is a barrier island off the coast of Virginia, and as early as the 1700s, there were sheep that were brought there and raised there by farmers. But in the 1930s, a hurricane struck the island very hard, and all of its human inhabitants left. And this means that the sheep on Hog Island went feral. In the 1970s, the island was purchased by the Nature Conservancy, and gradually these sheep were introduced to the mainland, and there were a number of breeders who tried to help the breed survive. Many of these sheep are located at Mount Vernon in Virginia, and there was also a number of the sheep introduced in New York in about 2004 by folks from the Finger Lakes Woolen Mill. So all of these people are involved in a conservation effort for the Hog Island sheep, and purchasing their roving is a way of participating in that conservation effort. The sheep come in a variety of colors, and their roving tends to be pretty coarse, but it's also very springy. And the package of roving that I purchased contains both a light color roving as well as a mixed blend that's sort of a milk chocolatey brown because it's a lighter and a darker locks that are mixed together. So I'm looking forward to spinning that and experimenting with the wool of this critical breed. After making our Hog Island fiber purchase, Sarah and I headed over to the barn where sheep are on display according to breed. And I learned so much walking around, visiting the sheep with Sarah, reading the literature, talking to some of the farmers, and trying to understand some of the distinction between different breeds of sheep. I have, of course, been perusing the Fleece and Fiber source book for information on different kinds of fiber as I encounter it, and it's been invaluable. But there's nothing quite like petting the sheep and talking to the farmers who raise them and seeing the different breeds in comparison to one another. So that was a great hour, or perhaps even more. And toward the end of it, Sarah had a Deb Robson sighting, and we probably would have gone up to bother her, except that she was very deep in conversation. Maybe she was even giving a tour to a couple of people in that barn. So we just admired from afar, and it was really cool to see Deb Robson at Maryland Sheep and Wool. Another suggestion I had from Yarns at Yinhu listeners for a purchase was to purchase a tool. And I had been thinking about either a Nastapin or a Lucette as one of my purchases. I found Stephen Willett in the main exhibition hall, and he was there with some of his beautiful handcrafted wood tools. He was demonstrating how to use a Lucette, and I decided to purchase one of the ones he had on display. It is a Lucette with a handle. There are versions with and without handles, and this is probably a tool that originated with the Vikings. It's extremely simple, and it helps the crafter make a kind of cord. It's not a braid, it's not knitted, it's a cord, and it's the cord that comes out is sort of square in shape. And he had samples demonstrating cord made from a variety of different kinds of yarn and fibers, including a very thick coarse spun yarn that was made into cord and then used to make a rug that looked kind of like a braided rug, but it was actually much more plush and much thicker than a braided rug. The Lucette I purchased is in curly maple. It's a beautiful blondish color wood with a lot of interest and shimmer as you turn the Lucette. Stephen also gave me a lesson for how to use it, and everyone who purchased a Lucette that day left with a beautiful and very thorough instruction manual on how to use it. So that is a tool that I will always have and always remember my visit to the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. Sarah and I visited the barn where fleeces were being sold, and I learned a great deal about what to look for when buying a fleece. Also, the folks who were volunteering and staffing that barn were extremely helpful and knowledgeable, so that I understood a lot of very basic things about how the fleeces were organized on the tables, what would happen as fleeces were purchased and new ones were put on the tables to take their place, how to read the tag explaining what was in the bag and what attributes of the fleece were important to notice and recognize and look for. And we also had a couple of podcaster sightings in the fleece barn, including Laura and Leslie of the Knit Girls and also Emily Chain of Fools of Fibertown. And we saw her again later at the podcaster meetup that happened down in the lower corral. And that's where Hobbledehoy's booth was. And I did take Between the Raindrops' suggestion, and I purchased a very small bag of batlings from Hobbledehoy. I plan to spin these with a spindle because they're very special. They're merino wool, silk, and yak, which is a blend that I've never tried before. They were in the Wildflower Wreath colorway, so a variety of different colors, pinks, purples, greens, browns, and I think there's even one that's bluish. So small bits of fiber in each of those colors, and I think it would be a lot of fun to take a page from Emily of Fibertown's book and spin them very slowly, very therapeutically on a spindle, and chain ply them and use them for a project. Emily made the Albers cowl, and I think that could be a good idea for how to use these small amounts of spindle spun fiber. That would also be a special project that would help me remember all of the different fibers I used and the process of spinning them on my spindle. I spent quite a bit of the day reconnecting with a cousin of my father's. Her name is Lisa Marion, and she is the proprietor of Spinner's Hill. And this was a booth located in the main exhibition hall. She was there with a couple of other vendors who shared the same booth and sold different products. And we were able to chat quite a bit and reconnect over the course of the day. Lisa is a phenomenal spinner, a shepherd. She's been involved with a variety of different kinds of breeds, and I didn't realize how involved she is in education. She goes into schools quite frequently with a program called Lamb to Loom, and we were able to just talk so much about our common interests and catch up on some family history and family events. When I was young, we used to visit the farm, which is near Bainbridge, New York, usually during February or March during lambing season. And it had been many, many years since I'd visited the farm or talked to Lisa. But over the past couple of months, we've been exchanging Facebook messages, and I was very eager to meet up with her at Maryland Sheep and Wool. So that was one of the highlights of the day for me. And Lisa sent me off with one of the crazy bats. The colors are selected by her mom, my dad's Aunt Marie, and they're done on an electric drum carder. Marie is 91 years old, and she is still involved in the fiber arts and very supportive of Lisa and all the things she does. So that will be a very special spinning experience when I get to it. Overall, the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival had similarities and some differences from the Rhinebeck Festival. I think for me, the main difference in the feeling about the two festivals was just the time of year. Rhinebeck is very much a harvest festival, being in the fall. Its fairgrounds are also a little more extensive, and it was much more crowded at Rhinebeck than it was in Maryland this weekend. It was definitely busy. There were a lot of people there. And during midday in a lot of the buildings, it was difficult to walk around. But I found that the fairgrounds overall were a little more manageable to negotiate. I loved the variety of tents that were outside and in the grass and allowed a lot more room to walk around. I felt like visiting the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, I knew a lot more about fiber and the varieties of sheep and the craft. And because I wasn't as focused on shopping as I was in the fall, I was able to concentrate on the people who were there and have a lot more engaged and intense conversations. I was so pleased to meet listeners of Yarns at Yinhu at the podcaster meetup and left having given away almost all of the buttons that I brought with me. I even had some people recognize me based on the logo on my shoulder bag. So that was really exciting and really rewarding just to know that listeners to the show are enthusiastic about the podcast and willing to say hi and talk to me about what they were purchasing and what they were wearing and projects they were excited about. It was just a truly rewarding experience. It was also nice to get some warm air and sunshine and to be able to walk around outside and going between the buildings. I sat in the grass for a while under some trees. And at Maryland Sheep and Wool, I noticed something that I didn't really see at all at Rhinebeck, which is groups of people form little camps under the trees. There were these beautiful trees that had been yarn bombed with a variety of different colors. So it made this nice shady grove where people would gather, and many of them brought in their lawn chairs, coolers, I think. I don't know. They had spinning wheels. And they spent a lot of the day just hanging around and chatting with each other and working on their projects. So that was a really nice aspect of the day and something I might consider doing if I travel there again. Certainly for me, one of the highlights of the day was to see Bob Halfley of Lone Oak Brooms use his equipment. I believe it's from the late 1800s. He has broom making equipment and sells brooms, of course, but also gives a narrated demonstration of how to use all of the equipment and how he makes his brooms. He's largely self-taught because he couldn't really find too many people who would show him how to use the equipment that he had purchased. And so he explained that he took apart a lot of brooms to figure out how they were made and how he could use his equipment to make them. If you've never been able to see Bob Halfley in action, I recommend a YouTube video that I have linked in the show notes, which shows his process and the narration that goes along with it. As I was standing there watching him demonstrate how to make a broom, I recalled a poem of Naomi Shihab Nye, which is one of my favorite poets. And I know that April, National Poetry Month, is over, but I think I'm going to close this episode with one additional poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. She has an American mother and a Palestinian father. She tells the story of how this poem came to be. She was visiting the old city, Jerusalem, with her father, thinking a great deal about how very personal acts can make very political statements. And I think that does a good job of summing up Naomi Nye's poetry in general. But I think you'll understand what I mean when you hear her poem, The Man Who Makes Brooms. So you come with these maps in your head, and I come with voices chiding me to speak for my people. And we march around like guardians of memory till we find the man on the short stool who makes brooms. Thumb over thumb, straw over straw, he will not look at us. In his stony corner, there is barely room for baskets and thread, much less the weight of our faces staring at him from the street. What he has lost or not lost is his secret. You say he is like all the men, the man who sells pistachios, the man who rolls the rugs. Older now, you find holiness in anything that continues, dream after dream. I say he is like nobody. The pink seam he weaves across the flat golden face of his broom is its own shrine, and forget about the tears. In the village, the uncles will raise their keffiyehs from dominoes to say, "No brooms in America?" And the girls who stoop to sweep the courtyard will stop for a moment and cock their heads. It is a little song, this thumb over thumb, but sometimes when you wait years for the air to break open and scents to fall out, it may be the only one.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for today's episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider leaving a review or a rating on iTunes, or you can like the show's Facebook page. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's a get you high till your face is smile. Jump on a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine. Nature.